So I was telling you about this dragon workshop that I went to about, oh, I think it was last Sunday. It wasn't that long ago, about 4 days ago. And if you're like anyone else, TJ, you've heard all different kinds of stories with the dragons, right?
You know what? The thing is, if I went to have an interview with a woman who seemed to cross in another dimension and told me that she rode on the back of a dragon, I probably would have had not quite the understanding that I do now. But my feeling that these really were beings that were here at one point and they left because things changed, the vibration changed here, and a lot of things went into hiding or just left. And like the unicorns and those kind of things, because it wasn't like it once was. I think there was a time when the vibration was right for them to be here. And I got the, you know, history paints them as this, these things that destroyed things and evil. And I think maybe just the opposite. They really, and maybe there were ones that did that, but I think there were a lot that were really helping us and really were divine, mystical creatures that were part of this, you know, our belief at a different time, a well-accepted belief.
I'm totally with you. Now, I had an experience when I've been having these things that have been happening over the years with dragons that I didn't understand. But Sunday, when I was at this workshop, I was actually taken through this process to meet my guardian dragon, you know, which was really cool. Yeah.
We have guardian dragons. We have guardian dragons, huh?
Yeah, well, that was my experience, and it was interesting. I had a few days where I like to say, rather than saying I had a day, I like to say I was having a moment. So I had a few days that had a long moment to them. And every once in a while, stuff, you know, with any of us can kick up where, you know, you may feel like you need added protection. And I was so involved with what I was doing, I wasn't thinking about the dragon workshop that, you know, it was somehow linked to all that. Well, when I went to the dragon workshop, I realized what I had done was manifested some opportunities where I could start to work with this dragon if, you know, if I had made contact with one, you know. So I went in, and I was doing my best not to get attached, although when I go to anything, I'm like a little kid. It's like, I want some of it too, you know? So, but I was taken through this meditation, and the woman who headed the workshop, her name is Linda Applegate, and she's lovely. She's a very sweet soul and working with some really powerful stuff, and I'd love to have her on our show at some point when I can make contact with her. But in the meantime, she had taken me through this process, and we were given a choice. We could, like, go down the path of air, earth, fire, or water. And I was drawn to go down the path of fire. And when I went down there, I was, like, seeing volcanoes and whatever. And then before me, this two-headed dragon comes from out of nowhere. And I was telling you before, but I thought I'd fill in our listeners here. And initially, we were supposed to ask for a name, and the only thing I got was twin. And what came to me was these were twins, these dragons. You know, they were like twin soulmates, twin connectors or whatever. And one side was very masculine, and the other side was very feminine. And the masculine side was black. His name, I found out later on, his name was Sparky. Hmm. And the other side was very feminine, I know. And her name, the masculine side was very black and very fire-breathing. As a matter of fact, when I first saw him, I thought, oh, no. You know, is this okay? But then I got really calm, and I just looked this dragon in the face, And you know how everything's a reflection of you.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of calmed down enough and recognized, yep, that's me when I'm really mad. You know? It kind of came to me.
Yeah.
And I got very strong that this was also an energy that would help to transmute things for me if I needed things to transmute. And it would also help me in other ways. And then I saw the other head, and I didn't see her color right away, but then later on it came to me that her color was like a rainbow color. It was like shimmering rainbow, and she had on a Rastafarian hat and big eyelashes. And she wasn't doing, she wasn't breathing fire, she was just blowing smoke. She was very nurturing, very calming, kind of like, well, what she was the Great Mother in dragon form. And I could feel her around me, and I could feel oneness with her. Kind of made me feel the feeling I feel when I'm holding a baby, you know, like that, like loving the baby that way. That's the feeling I get when I love the children. And so I thought this was really wild. But the names that came later on were Sparky and Mellow, which really, you know, kind of cracked me up.
Yeah.
Because years ago, I had a figurine, and I would jokingly call him Sparky. I just realized that this morning. So I had these interactions, and it's amazing because it wasn't anything like I thought it would be, you know, the whole dragon thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different. It was energetic. It was light. It was a sense of feeling empowerment, but absolute, like, unconditional love. I didn't feel any malice. I didn't feel like I had to throw up crosses anywhere. I didn't feel any of that, you know?
Nothing dark with it.
No. As a matter of fact, I felt the energy of the dragon is designed to help us transmute the dark. But then, you know, we all have, like, a shadow side of things we walk through, and sometimes we see it in ourselves or someone else. It doesn't mean we're not light. It just simply means there's an opportunity to dig and find more light, and I think the dragon helps with that. Have you ever felt a dragon?
I don't know, but I've been drawn to them, like you say, and I've had, like, you know, you sense, I guess maybe you sense something's there. And when we don't understand it, maybe we have a different, you know, and I believe it's probably deliberate that these things that have been around in the past, we've created this folklore around them that makes them something to be afraid of. Whereas it seems like things that are really there to help us, there are those who have put out this folklore to put it in our mind that these things are going to hurt us. And I think that's done so we don't explore these things. And so when we start to look into these things, we go, well, wait a second, this is not what I think it is. So I do feel a connection to the dragon. I definitely do feel a connection to the dragon. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying also echoes a similar conversation I had probably 5 years ago with a woman out of Michigan who lived in northern lower Michigan, and she talked about entering into this space, this dimensional space where this dragon had gone, and this was her friend, and this was nurturing. And it also was something she actually was allowed to ride on the back of it. She went for a ride on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it rings true what you're saying to me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. In the workshop, there was a woman there who also rode on her dragon. This was my first introduction. So, you know, we were on just speaking terms and getting acquainted. But I think the more you interact with them, the more the potential is there to really experience them, you know. It's like having an angel.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what struck me? You know what strikes me wild is Do you remember the era with dinosaurs and that kind of stuff?
Right.
Remember?
Oh, yeah.
I feel that was the era. I just kind of feel that that was in some way connected with dragon medicine.
Mm.
Now that we're talking about that, because you know how many little kids, and it's interesting, if they're not encouraged to look at dragons, they have a fascination with dinosaurs. And I have seen this over and over with the little kids, and I'm feeling they feel that connection. I feel there's like a thing there.
Yeah, you look at kids are really into the mystical of all that, right? And so anything that, you know, allows them to, it just seems like they have a natural connection to those kind of things. Girls especially seem to be drawn to the unicorn. Do you find that as well? They're more drawn to that end of it. And it's like, I always wondered that before I knew that those things actually existed. Why is that? Why do some people really feel this connection to something that, you know, I was always told never existed? And now, you know, I think there is that. Maybe that's the feminine energy in the unicorn that draws them in. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, the heart thread work that we do sometimes. There are times when I work on people and the unicorn comes in.
Hmm.
And I feel, too, like that era with the dragon and the unicorn and that kind of thing. I feel that you can discover them in fairyland. I feel like they always exist. I existed and they still exist, okay? But at the same time, I somehow feel there's a link from like what I was saying with the dinosaurs and the dragons. And who knows, maybe potentially the unicorns are in there somehow. Because there are times when you see pictures of things that are written or drawn where there are images of unicorn-like creatures in prehistoric aging.
Right.
You know, that the horse evolved from that. And, you know, there's all these people I know that are into horses, and kids are into horses. And I really feel the unicorn medicine is found in horses because there's this mythical, magical energy with horses. Did you ever see that movie, Gulliver's Travels? And when he goes into the land where he talks to the horses, and in the experience, and it was the one with Ted Danson, and what happens is, the horses, or their consciousness, the way they speak and behave, is very similar to what the horses bring in here, except people don't hear them. What they do is they understand the importance of working with people or working with everything being equal, and they see and understand things in a way that humans don't, which is true of horses in general. But this story, Gulliver's Travels, has the segment in there on that, which is way cool. It really got my attention. But that kind of whole piece, the horses, the unicorns, all that kind of stuff, I feel that's interconnected too. I do.
That's cool. That's cool.
You there?
And this, yes, I hear, I'm there.
Yeah, have you?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
What?
What were you going to say?
No, I thought you said something.
I did. I said, I just think that's cool. And it's like, we had a horse when I was a kid. And my brother and my sister loved riding the horse. I wasn't into it. I guess I was a little afraid. And then after my mother passed in 1997. And she came back from the other side in 2011. And she had a horse with her. And it took me a while, and then she just projected love at me. She, just this wave of love and this light just went right through me, and she looked healthy, so I know it was her. And then there's a horse nuzzling her shoulder next to her, and it didn't hit me at the time. But when I came out of that, it was kind of like coming out of a dream, but it was so vivid, and I know it was a visitation. I realized that was our horse that was with her that we had when I was a kid. And somebody told me that the horse helped bridge brought her to this so she could see me. It helped.
Dimension.
Yeah. It helped her so she could communicate mm-hmm. with me on that level.
Oh, I believe that. You know, one of the first places souls will visit when they make transition is they'll go over the Rainbow Bridge and they'll go in and meet up with the animals. So if you think of it like it's a stopover and they'll go in there. And I think so your mom could connect with you, it's like they have to lower their vibration. So I think that, you know, the potential is real strong where the horse, you know, was able to be work as a middle, a medium mm-hmm. for her to connect with you through. So I think that, yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, do you have a fascination with unicorns?
Yeah, I definitely do. I've always had a fascination with them. I'm drawn to the mystical, magical things. And I've always had that, the leprechaun, all those things that exist. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, has always felt like there's something, some truth to that, that I believe in that.
Well, the reason I asked is because maybe rather than experience a horse as a horse, you've experienced the horse energy through a unicorn. And maybe that's what you resonate with the strongest.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
Rather than the horse itself. Yeah. But anyway, well, that's really exciting. I love that your mom came to you on a horse.
Well, she wasn't riding on
the magical kind of way.
She wasn't riding the horse. The horse
had
one. She had a squirrel in one hand because my mom was just so connected to animals and she was just a gentle, loving being. But the squirrel was, I told you this story before, but the squirrel was nuzzling up underneath her chin, rubbing her like loving her, you know? And the horse was loving her on with his head on her shoulder, just kind of like rubbing up against her. And the squirrel was actually a squirrel, I believe, that was once in my yard. It's funny how I just put it all together later. But the squirrel was a squirrel that was driving me nuts. I mean, I was angry with this squirrel because he was getting into everything. And I actually took a shot at him with the .22. And I knocked him out of a tree. And apparently I didn't hit him. And he crawled up the tree looking at me like, are you going to finish me off? Really sad look on his face. And I thought, no, I don't want to finish you off. I'll make a trap. I'll build something. I'll catch you, and I'll release you somewhere else. Now, this is when I first moved out to Wilson. So I built this trap, and I had to keep, you know, I'm not much of a carpenter. Let's just throw that out there. And so I made it, and he chewed his way out in a matter of seconds. And then so I made it with some chicken wire, and the door wouldn't close. So then I had to do some more adjusting. And finally, the door closed. He got in there, and I took him and drove him probably 10 miles from where I live. And I said, I'm going to release you here. Don't ever come back. Please don't ever come back. I was out in the country. I figured he'd have a good squirrel life, you know. And I think that was him coming back with my mom to say, thank you. You made the right decision. I appreciate it.
No.
So that was explained his presence.
And he never came back.
He never came back. He was getting into all kinds of things. I saw him chasing birds. It's like he was a rogue squirrel. And he'd sit on the deck. He'd sit on the deck and he'd chew on his little acorns or whatever. And he'd be mocking me when I come out there. And he'd be yelling at me. And it's like, this is my deck. Get off my deck. It's like he was taking over the whole yard.
Well, you know, I heard that animals, or of all the animal kingdom, squirrels have the closest consciousness to humans, the way it works. I heard this, you know. And I have experienced that because there are times when I have been around squirrels, I could literally feel their consciousness, and it was almost startling, you know. And I think it's because their form is so different than a human, but you get that they know what's going on. You can feel it vibrationally you're sensitive. Like, I think you did, yeah.
Well, yeah. I sense about this guy is that he lost his mama. and he wasn't good at social interaction. And he was really trying to teach me to not to value life, which I always do. But in this one case, I was willing not to value life. And I was willing to end his life, which thank goodness I was not a good shot neither. And then it taught me this great lesson of loving all things, which I normally do in the right frame of mind. And what it also teaches me that if you take the life of an animal, this is such a good example, but my father-in-law, I love him. He's a wonderful man. But he shoots every critter that comes in his yard. He'll tell me, I had some skunks, TJ, and I had to shoot them. And then another one shows up, and they keep coming, and they keep coming. And I said, this is what you're going to get if you do that. If you take the life of something, you're going to get more. What it's trying to teach you is to cohabit with these things. And if you can't cohabit, in my case, then catch it and release it peacefully somewhere else and move on. If you absolutely can avoid taking the life of this, because guess what? It's going to set a pattern in the universe and something else is going to come along. And it's funny because my father-in-law and I, we get along great. He's a great person. We went to do what I call a live remote for the radio station. And on the way back, and he was always complaining, I got these, skunks. Skunks was another thing, that he was always shooting the skunks. And I would never shoot the skunks. They can chew up my yard all they want. They come out at night and they do that. So we pull in the driveway after we'd been in Marquette, and it's like pretty late at night because I had to do a broadcast a night. It was a night football game, and I was doing a live broadcast. And so it's like 11 o'clock midnight, and I'm pulling in his yard, right in his front yard. There's a skunk digging up his yard. And I'm looking at him and said, there you go, Bob. This is what you get for always trying to take the life of the skunks. They're going to send more. We'll keep making more. You shoot them. We're gonna keep making more and send them your way until you get it. And so I'm at peace with him, and I almost never run into him. And they pretty much leave me alone. All the critters that I've heard people complain about, you should kill squirrels because they do damage. Once in a while they might get into something, but I choose not to. And I rarely have a problem with my outbuildings. You've been to my place. I rarely have a problem with animals getting into things and destroying things because it's my attitude, I think, towards them. It's what makes a huge... Yeah. This is how we coexist with things. So, sorry, I went off in another direction.
No. It's all good. I think this is also a part of the magic of the earth, you know?
Right.
These things, there are certain things that people aren't aware of that we can do besides just haul off and kill them. Like, I have a thing I do. I'll say to all the critters in my little place here, especially the spider people, I'll say, look, here's the deal. I'm giving you 3 days, you know, to get out, and you can play outside, but I don't want you in my place. I don't want you here. You're not paying rent, you know?
Yeah.
And I tell them there's other places they can go and hang out, like the stream down the street and whatever, you know. And I have to tell you, I would say, now the first year I tried it, it took a little while for them to catch one. It did. Second year I did it, oh my God, 80% decrease. Now what they like doing, though, is they love to build webs right out in my windows. So when you walk past my place, it literally looks like a witch lives there with all the spider webs and everything. It's really funny. But they don't come inside for the most part, I would say. I tell them, though. I just talk to them. I'm dealing with having a conversation with the flies right now. Not because I have a whole lot. I just have a few. And, you know, I really don't like having them around, you know, even if there's only two. It's like, look, you're really getting on my last nerve now, you know. So go outside. You can play outside because that's really all they're doing. They're playing, you know. They're all like, they have consciousness. They're trying to take care of themselves. They're playing their role, you know, and they're teaching us. You know,
go ahead. I was just going to tell you,
no,
I had more than once, I had two times in my life at least, I had strange, not strange, I think incredibly wonderful interaction with a fly. And one time was when I was writing.
Really?
Yeah, one time I was writing about my dad, and I thought, well, maybe this is my dad, you know. But I was in the room where we have our computer and where I do writing, and this fly flew down, and he landed on my hand. And he proceeded to crawl through every opening in my hand, and I would open and close my hand, and he wouldn't leave. And I easily, of course, could have ended his life. And I just thought, this is so fascinating. It's like he's communicating with me. And in the end, I just let him go. And then I was outside where, you know, it's one thing if they're in the house. Maybe they get a little groggy towards the end of their life. They kind of just land anywhere and they don't worry about it. But this was outside maybe last year, and I was out on the deck and I was grilling out. And this fly came, and he just was in love with me. And he crawled through everywhere through my hand, all over it. Again, I could have closed my hand and squished him. I would get up. He'd fly off of me. I'd go turn, you know, something on the grill, turn the stuff over. And I sit back down, right back again. He was on me. And to me, it's just that deeper connection that this thing was trying to make with me, because I was open to it, and I wasn't going to squish him because I thought he was annoying. You know, I've done my fair share of squishing. Let's put that way, and fly swatting. But this one, this little fella, just caught my attention. I thought, you know, plus we're outside. I don't ever want to hurt something. Inside's maybe a little different, you know, but outside, I still try to avoid if I can. Now, you talked about the spiders. There was a woman, I don't remember who it was, that told me this. She had spiders in her basement. She told them to actually go to the other side of the basement because she didn't want them where she was at. And they literally packed up and went to a different part of the basement. So that's pretty cool.
Yep, they do. They get it. And, you know, in Native American teachings, spider medicine is weaving the web of life, and it's grandmother medicine. So whenever I see spider, I automatically think, oh, the grandmothers are blessing us now. So I don't have this extreme aversion to them. You know what I mean? I think of them in a reverent way. Now, I'm working on mastering flies right now, so thank you for sharing your fly story. I don't kill them outside, though. I don't. I won't kill anyone outside, you know. I just figure if they're here and they're not honoring my boundaries in my apartment, that's a different story. You know? But I try not to kill them. I really do. I really do. As a matter of fact, I think with spiders, I haven't had to do that really. You know, I just stay clear, and they'll do that though. So that's a wild story with flies.
Oh, yeah.
I had an experience, a oneness experience, I think it was like 30 years ago, with a roach, if you can imagine. It was the freakiest thing, but I went into this place, and during those days, I was meditating 18 hours a day sometimes. So believe me, I was traveling with beings and stuff, and I had this experience, with, of all things, like a roach. And I looked at it different, but I still now, you know, I mean, I don't have any of those people living here. Thank you very much. I thought it was just a very odd thing, you know. It was really not some place that I would intuitively think I need to go there, you know. But, you know, we're living oneness, and I think in living oneness, it's about including everything. Not, you know, we have the mythical, those we love, and I think there are some that are easier to accept or like as well as love. And I think we get stretched according to where we need to go, you know?
Right. Well, so, a lot of it came from a lot of it came from my mother, because she didn't like to take the life of anything, and she would actually catch flies and release them outside, which I thought was
interesting.
I don't know many people that have.
Yeah.
I mean, I do catch bugs now, and I will release them outside, but a lot of times I'll get the fly swatter, and it's just easier.
Yeah.
There we go. Or my wife freaks out about this.
I appreciate your honesty.
My wife freaks out about it. If it was me, chances are a lot of those bugs would just be, they'll eventually die. But she says, oh, there's a spider. Get it. So then I have to get the Kleenex and go grab the spider. Well, when you grab him, he's going to probably be squished. Or if there's ladybugs, we get a lot of those ladybugs. Sometimes I'll just capture them.
Oh, I love ladybugs.
Well, these are the Asian ones. And these are not the ones like a typical ladybug. These are the Asian ones that were imported here, and they have they stink. I mean, they're still ladybugs. And
really?
They will even bite you. They're not like the typical.
Really?
Yeah, these are Asian import that somehow wound up in this country. And we would have them in hordes. I mean, there would be a ton of them. They're not as bad as they used to be. But we would be every day sucking them up with a vacuum or removing them some way. And me personally, most of the time, they don't bother me, but she just freaks out. So that's kind of where I'm at. I have to be the guy that removes a lot of those things.
Okay, well, let me tell you something magical about ladybugs, okay, or beetles, any form of beetles, you know. They're the Egyptian symbol for everlasting life. You know that one, right?
No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? Yeah. They're a symbol of immortality of the soul. And ladybugs, whether I think Chinese or American, are a symbol of good fortune and good luck. So it's interesting. You know, I once in a while I'll see ladybugs. They haven't stunk around me. I don't know what that is. Maybe it has to do with they hang out in the woods.
Well, I think this is a different breed. This is a different breed of them. This is the Asian version. So the Asian version has a smell to them. They somehow got into this country, and I don't know if they're released on purpose, but because sometimes they'll release a certain species to eat another species, and then you got to get a species to eat this species, and that's what our government does sometimes. And so this species was like a plague. Everybody where I live in this area up here was experiencing them. And generally what they did is they would move through, and then they'd be gone. Well, we keep getting them. They don't want to move through. It's like, I don't know how they get in our... They get in our house. I think they find a way to get into they can crawl in really tight spaces and in the siding, I think, and then somehow they work their way in. Because I have no idea how somebody can get in our house. And, you know, it is what it is.
Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? I swear to God, I've done this when I worked with the kids in teepees. I've actually gone and done the bug clearings in people's homes. There is such a thing. And we just go and stand in the center of your home, make a declaration, and say, you know, honor them, thank them for coming and bringing the message they bring. You know that they're one with you, and tell them they're free to go. And as a matter of fact, you prefer they leave now. The agreement is, because this is your space, just like they have their space, that when they come into your space, they're not honoring you, and you'll do what's needed to have them leave. But just make the declaration. Tell them to go. See how that goes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right? Yeah. So, in the middle of all that magical animal stuff, it's interesting. I think... part of, you know how we're all like working on this co-creating heaven on earth stuff, and, you know, people are like, well, how does that get here? And, you know, when we were talking about dragons and unicorns, I really feel that those are part of the people of the fairy dimensions. And when people say, okay, heaven's coming to earth now, and what all that means is those dimensions are landing here, you know, I feel like what's happening is this crossover with, like, the kids and the animals and light workers and new souls that are being born. They're bringing those frequencies and dimensions here. So all these messages about dragons and unicorns, you know, they are coming through with these new births and with the energy the kids are bringing. But I also feel just like that's happening now. I'm saying it. just like it's happening with the kids, I feel like some of the animals are bringing some of that stuff through. Because when you stop and you look at it, look at the fact that, you know, we nowadays, there's nothing, it's nothing new to see a lion laying down with, like, a squirrel, you know, or something like that. And I think it's because they're bringing those frequencies through, too. That just came to me. You there?
Yes, I'm trying to think of when you said a lion laying down with a squirrel. I don't know if I've ever seen that. But I have.
Well, I've seen so many stories of animals crossing over, taking care of each other.
Right.
There's like
right.
all these stories like that.
There
now.
Was a story, you know,
and
what?
I think.
I was just going to say, Joy, just to get off it for a second, there was a story about a lioness who was taking care of a mule deer, a baby mule deer, because it killed the mother.
Yeah.
Now that is like.
Yeah.
How come it didn't eat it? You know, so maybe it's recognizing for a moment just the greater vibration that we're all connected to.
I totally feel that that's on, and I feel that's part of that having come into Earth frequency, and I feel that having come into Earth frequency includes the fairy realms and the mystical, magical realms, and it's just branching out. It's like this, they say we're all interconnected, you know, so all these hidden pieces, like dragons and unicorns and that kind of stuff, all these things are being revealed now because it's time for the secrets to come out.
And the thing
out.
Is, the
and
thing
not
is,
only that, they're interconnected. They're interconnected to all these different things, like the animals and the kids and us and all that, you know?
Well, I was going to ask you, Joy, because we've talked about this a little bit, and I guess I want to get your take on it. These things were here at one time, and they left because things shifted on this planet. So they left for their own safety, or they left for their own, they didn't want to be a part of the vibrational change. Now, let's face it, there's been a lot of turmoil. And we know it's part of an agreement that's been allowed to take place. So with the divine feminine energy coming back, is that what's happening? These things are returning because they were here at one time, correct?
Well, I feel that, you know, they just went into a different dimension, like a different neighborhood and hung out, you know. And since the call of the feminine has occurred, I feel that this particular crowd, like the dragons and unicorns and the fairies particularly and the water sprites and all that, all these guys are linked to the divine feminine, where the angels are connected to the masculine, the God. It's safe to think of angels in the realm of the Godhead. And, you know, the goddess was in hiding for hundreds of years, so everything that was representative and brought through her went with, you know, and that was part of the balance. So now all this stuff and all these beings and these magical creatures and everything, they're reemerging with her because it's part of the balance. It's part of the oneness again. But I think there were always souls here that spoke to fairies. And, you know, so they weren't totally forgotten. There were souls that came and held that, you know. I mean, in Ireland, you know, they never totally got rid of the fields that were dedicated to the fairies over there. There's actually fields that humans are not allowed to cut, and they tend to them, you know, over there because the fairies hang out there, you know, and they know it, and they're seen there.
That's,
you know,
cool. Yeah.
So that, yeah, but in, like, in the United States, we've had all this different doctrine and stuff like that, and it was very patriarchal. So, like in Europe and everything, they had the goddess Bridget, and her power was so strong when they tried to destroy her temple, they couldn't completely do it. The people became enraged, so they made her a saint. And in making her a saint, there was always this loophole for those beings to exist there. And then eventually she reclaimed her temples. And I think it was during that time all the different messages about fairies came out really strong. But, you know, it's interesting. In my little fairy nook, I have a little fairy nook that I created, and I've noticed over the years there's different beings that come in. Like I have unicorns, I have dragons, and different things. But they come in waves, but you can see them and feel that they're all connected. Like I just look at them, and the kids come, and they stand there, and they feel it. I'll see them literally stand there, take a deep breath, and kind of go, oh, home, you know, because it's what they know.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel there were always imprints. It just wasn't known. But now it is. Yep. Yes.
And so they...
And it's interesting. Well, I was going to say, when I took this dragon workshop, I asked, you know, if the dragons, this dragon that I'm working with, you know, had some specific work that they wanted to do. And it was interesting. One of the things that was said to me was they really wanted to help the kids ground their energy here. Like, this is something that would help them feel safe in doing that. So I thought that was pretty cool. Because kids, are, like you said, they're so into it.
Yeah, you're just open to it. And it seems like a, you know, I remember as being a kid, it seemed like a natural fit that these things were very mm-hmm. real. And it's like, not only did you want them to be real, but it just seemed, this is why Walt Disney, the wonderful world of Disney, especially the original concept by Walt Disney, mm-hmm. I think appealed. I watched it as a kid, but it always had that magical, innocent, you know, it's changed a lot now. It's not what it once was. I would not recommend it as much to people compared to way I think it was truly, it's like Walt captured that. He captured that and he brought it to life. And now things have changed. I think they're not as true to that as they once were. But that's why the magical world of Disney, I think, works, because of we know there's some truth in that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Now, there are, I do want to say there are two fantasy stories that I highly recommend that are really, really good. I saw Maleficent. Did you see that?
Mm-mm. No, I didn't.
Oh, my word. I mean, you have to bring tissues, though, when you see this. It is like they took... What they wind up doing is telling the story of the wicked fairy godmother and what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it is freaking amazing. It takes all this prejudice off. Mm-hmm. It's what it does. See, this is something, you know, one thing, I mean, I love the Walt Disney stories too, but, you know, and I know that on a conscious level, Walt Disney had this great consciousness, but he also had these prejudices.
Mm.
And his prejudices, okay. I think sometimes, I don't know if you know his story, but I think his prejudices came out sometimes in the good guy, bad guy thing. So what's been happening that is a positive is they're taking the prejudices off. They're not totally disagreeing with his story. They're just expanding on them some. And not all the stories. There's two in particular I've seen recently that I just fell in love with. Some of them I have no desire to see. But I saw The New Cinderella. That's another one. I cried. You know, it was really sweet. So I highly recommend that one. But they made it believable. There was magic, but they made it believable. And they had a message to it. I don't want to tell anyone anything just in case they want to see it. But those two I think you'd like. The others I haven't seen, so I can't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you, though. If you're saying they're not so hot, I believe you.
Well, I just noticed how they...
But there was some...
I was just going to say, I noticed how they've incorporated more adult themes, and it's not as innocent as it once was. And I think they always used to guard...
That's true.
They used to always guard against that, because you're dealing with kids. Let's keep it innocent. There's no reason to peddle sex or those kind of things, and that's what I see going on way too much. And it's about making a buck.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. For with a lot of them, yeah, I think you see that a lot. But I'm really, I think you would enjoy the Maleficent movie. It's like my new favorite movie of all time now, you okay. know, seriously. Yeah. But, so there was something we were going to do today. What was it?
We were going to talk.
We got so into this conversation. We do this though, you know, we start with one thing and we wind up over in a whole other neighborhood. We're very good at that.
Well, you had said that maybe you want to talk to, because this kind of ties into all of that, Morgan Le Fay. Is that something you still want to do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, how much time do we have?
Well, we're about 15 minutes away from, you know, we're 45 minutes into it. So what do you want to do? Do you want to work with the dragons?
Well, what we could do, since we kind of have the dragon theme going on, if you want, is maybe just kind of check in and, you know, I could, like, try sending some dragon medicine to you, and maybe we could do Camelot one day or something
sure.
like that.
Sounds
okay?
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
That sound good?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So if you could talk to a dragon, I'm gonna focus on everything and, you know, but if you could talk to a dragon and ask it any questions or anything, you know, why don't you think about that for a minute? And, you know, we'll see if Sparky or Mello has a message or some energy to send or something, okay? And I haven't done this before, so this it may come through like the dragon speaking through or like a mediumship. I don't know which. But, you know, I'm open to whatever's in the highest good, okay?
Sure.
That sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay. So why don't you go ahead and I'll go ahead. I heard, oh, I am here. Hold on. Sparky's the name. Transmutation is the game.
So, are we ready to roll then?
Yeah, if you want to ask questions, I can hear him.
Okay.
I'm just relaying what I hear him say.
Okay.
But that was really what I heard. I heard, Sparky's the name. Transmutation is the game.
Yeah.
So it looks like he has the sense of humor.
Great. So we have the mythical understanding of dragons, breathing fire, flying. How much of that is accurate?
Somewhat accurate, I would say.
Okay.
In the 73% range.
Okay.
Part of it were designed roles that were assisted to help play out themes and stories and dramas. So I'm hearing, you know, there was a themes like what Linda Applegate said, that certain dragons were assigned certain roles to play, good guy, bad guy roles, to help the light shine brighter. So, you know, there were angels that fought dragons, and because of that, the angels were given the chance to show how brightly they could shine, okay? But the dragon was just playing the role. It wasn't that they were a bad guy, you know? It was just, okay, I'll sign up for that. And there in the fairy realms, there are children, even now, that understand that, you know, their etheric pets are dragons, and that they were assigned dragons when they were born to assist in keeping them safe during tumultuous times, and that some of the dragons would help shed a light where there was density, and they would help diminish or disintegrate the grids that were destructive, that were laid because of density. So they're in service now. They're in service, and they're making themselves known to people because they, too, are ready to come out of hiding, and they, too, wish to assist in service of oneness, and they, too, are... There, it feels like you have a dragon around you, too. They, too, want to help in whatever way they can to bring the pieces into resolution so that all souls are living that. So they will stretch themselves in and out of dimensions. They will be seen as shimmers of energies walking beside light workers. They will become more known, and they're saying, I hear this one saying that their fashion statement at times is humor, because they're also here to help lighten things, and they're saying that there have been remnants and memories and myths. So that the long-forgotten idea that they weren't real would be addressed at some point so that they would have their say once more and that they would be known as real.
Okay, I want to ask because
they have chosen to come back.
Why did they leave? I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but did they leave because... things changed here, or was it part of an agreement? Or you see the movies where they kind of go underground. Things, a lot of the vibration got a lot different here at some point, and I'm assuming a lot of things left because of that.
Well, I'm hearing we left because we had to, because the disintegration of the divine feminine. Her energy wasn't being welcomed, and they had to go off in the dimensions and retain their presence or status in those dimensions of light where the sacredness of the oneness, the divine feminine, was held in safety. So it wasn't that they totally went away, though, because just as Mother Mary has established herself in certain religions, the dragons were willing to take on the bad guy role and be seen as bad guys through patriarchal teachings, just so that their energy could be here to some degree and so that people wouldn't totally forget them until it was time for the reemergence. But they were just kind of, I hear them say, think of them as primarily being on vacation. That's what happened.
Okay.
Because the agreement was that for hundreds and even thousands of years, patriarchal would rule until it was time for the reemergence of, of the divine feminine and for the union to present itself once more on the planet.
Was there a time that the dragons, you know, it's always been associated to this, the times of knights, and those different time periods, is that all mythical? Even going back to King Arthur, I think they talk about dragons in that time period. Is that all mythical at that point?
Yes and no. Yes and no, because if you look at that time with the time of King Arthur, during that time, the betrayal of the dragon, they were generally seen as evil, okay? And that was the crossover. The crossover point was 2,000 years ago with Christ and Magdalene shifting the power. But, you know, so after that, it took hundreds of years. So there was still some talk of the goddess, but the shift into the god, like during King Arthur, as you know, there was those that were practicing the faith of the god and the goddesses at the same time, and there were conflicts. And one of the things that was conflicted was the messages surrounding anything linked to how the goddess was represented. And, you know, dragon medicine is, you know, it's an element of power that, you know, is four elemental. It's, you know, fire, earth, water, air. So it is linked to the divine feminine. But at that point, it was taking on a role to establish itself here and to still be present, but it was willing to be seen as evil just to, you know, hold that point while the god was shifting. Does that make sense to you?
It certainly does. Yes, it does.
All right. You can hear them very clearly. You know,
so,
I hear them. Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead.
What was... I know everything has its purpose and everything chooses to be, but what is the essence of the dragon bring then? What does that bring to us?
Well, it depends on what your personal dragon is there, how it's there to assist you. So in my case, Joy Regina Melchizedek, my dragon came with two heads. Because it would give me availability to work with transmutation and to do peace work. So it was, you know, it was designed that I would have this particular type of medicine. Now, some people, male, and you know, there's no right or wrong or no special. It's not like that. It's what's going to serve the individual. So somebody may, let's say, for example, and I'm just hearing this, let's say somebody is very, very sick, and they're looking at making transition. Now, one of the quickest ways to raise energy is through humor. So this dragon might come to them with the ability to help them transmute negative thought forms through humor, which will help them laugh, help them raise their frequency. There may be a child who needs to feel very, very protective. So the great mother energy may come through their dragon, maybe female. There are baby dragons, though, too, that come and they'll fly around and, you know, they spark things. So, you know, they do many, many things, just like angels and fairies do many, many things. There's not just one particular type of dragon. There's just so many, so, so many.
It's funny because we know about, you know, like with the fairies, kind of what they do and angels and all that, but really we don't know with the dragons. That's why it's something that you're curious about. But I mean, now I understand a little more what they're here to do. And I'm guessing it's unlimited like anything.
But, sure. But I think one of the big things to recognize is, you know, it was interesting. I keep hearing transmutation, like their fire will help transmute things. It'll help cut through density and all kinds of stuff. And at the same time, it's interesting, my experience with my own dragon was I felt that. And then when I felt mellow, and she was really cool, big long eyelashes with a Rastafarian hat, kind of laying there and like smoke just coming out of her nostrils, so mellow. But this infinite love just came pouring around, and I felt so safe, and so it was wild. And then I had the sensation of holding baby dragons on my lap while this was going on, and that love was just going out. So it was really cool, you know. But so it can be different, you know. I think the big thing is on the journey of discovering them is to just try to stay open to what your personal experience is, and maybe not be attached. Now, when I was in this workshop, right, you know how sometimes you'll second guess yourself and whatever. A lot of these dragons' names were things like Claire and Bob and that kind of thing, because apparently they have these big, long names that you can't understand. Well, when I got the names I got, I was like, are these real? It was like I checked in. It was like, oh, yeah, these are their names, you know, and it was kind of like, okay, I have to allow for some individual flavor with even their names, which helped me let go of the idea of being attached to whatever's seen as normal, because maybe the work they're going to do has a unique flavor, and you need to stay with that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I feel everybody must have a dragon, you know? I heard it's true, you know, it's like, everybody has guardian angels and everybody has spirit animals. It's just, you know, where you're willing to go through to discover that relationship and what it's like, you know. I also feel everybody's got to have a unicorn somewhere, you know. Although there are times when I've done spirit animal readings for kids, and I know that a spirit animal of some of the kids I know is unicorn. So it's kind of interesting. But I don't know many people who have that as part of their spirit animal guardian. I wonder if you do. I think you probably do. Because you felt that connection with them so early on.
Yeah, yeah. I've always felt that they were. Mm-hmm. I guess I've always been into the mystical, you know, at a very young age. You know, it just appealed to me. So
yeah.
I'm guessing whatever appeals to you, probably there's a experience that you've had with it before, perhaps. Or just awareness.
Yeah. Well, I think with you and I, too, what most people perceive as mystical, I think that was natural for us. Mm-hmm. I think it was always natural. We didn't have an idea that that was weird or bizarre. It just was. So, you know, it's the world is catching up with the idea that this is natural, you know. That's what's happening, I think, now, that this is natural, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I didn't understand it when I was younger, but I was still intrigued by it. It just fascinated me. Anything, well, you know me now, anything that I can find that is unknown, that I can uncover, or things that I think that are trying to come forward, you know, that's what I really support and want to bring forward. So it's good to talk to you, dragons. We love you. Thank you for all you do.
I saw two dragons, and I'm just telling you what I see. I saw one blow smoke out of its nose, and I couldn't fully see. It looks like a shimmering. And then I saw a little gentle fire come out of another one's nose. So I think they were both here. And I'm hearing this song in the background. And the song is Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah, that's good.
So I think that's mellow. Well,
that's
I think
really
that's
good.
Mellow.
Who'd have thought,
yeah,
they, had, who'd
so
have thought they had a sense of humor like that? But I guess all things do, really, when you tap into the oneness, humor is a part of everything, isn't it?
I think so. And it's interesting. We were talking about Morgan Le Fay earlier, and she's like, I think there's an intensity with her because her story was so warped that mm-hmm. she's very much on the focus with trying to clean up the truth. But, you know, I can't imagine that she wouldn't have some humor in there. Right. I just think she has to meet you to bring it out.
Oh, okay. Well, we're just about out of time for this week. And is there anything else you want to add?
Well, it was just nice to sit and have some rambling time, chit-chatting time with you, you know? It's always interesting what we come up with during a conversation.
How do we know if our dragon is around us? Are there certain things that we will see? Or, I mean, if you said that they're kind of like a light around us, a shimmer around us. I mean, I'm sure I've had some experiences, but how do I recognize that?
Well, I think that maybe what you could do is try asking directly. I feel there is a dragon around you, but I don't want to tell you what I see because I don't want to interrupt you meeting it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think it's important for you to have that experience. So maybe what you want to do when you meditate is ask. Now, like I said, I want to have Linda Applegate on the show because, you know, she's doing some cool stuff. I just gave a taste. And I'm glad we got a chance to cover all this other stuff. But I would suggest you try meditating and asking. And then see if you feel, like sometimes I feel this energy of Sparky or Mellow around me. I just feel them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or see them, you know. Yeah. So let me know how that goes.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. It makes me think back to when I was younger. Perhaps I had an encounter with something like that.
Yeah. And remember the song Puff the Magic Dragon?
Yeah. I remember that.
Remember that song?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I always loved about that song? It was the story of a loving dragon.
Yeah.
It wasn't a mean dragon.
It wasn't a...
It's the first loving dragon I'd ever heard of.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you very much, Joy. I guess we will be doing another show down the road here pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, I think we will. I think we're going to have some new guests coming up, too. And I know Ted wasn't able to be with us today, but you know, there's always a divine reason for everything, so we'll see what happens in the future, okay? And I don't know. I just enjoyed chit-chatting with you, Brother Tejas.
Same here, Joyce.
To all our listeners, thank you for listening in. And we hope you have a wonderful week or two and enjoy the spring weather that has finally come in, right?
Yes. Woo! It's nice.
Yeah! And we'll catch up later. Take care. Many blessings, everyone. Thank you, TJ.
You're welcome. Thank you.